If you are someone who's looking to learn more about fertility awareness method for natural birth control or conception, and you're ready to finally get to the root of hormone imbalances for good, this is the podcast for you. The cool thing is, Fertility Awareness Method is here for you in all seasons of your life. When you're looking to prevent pregnancy, when you're ready to conceive, and when you want to use it postpartum. So if you're in the phase of your life where you are looking for a natural form of birth control without all the hormones, head on over to my free training, nourishedwithnina.com/famtraining for all of the information. All right, let's go ahead and hop right into this new episode.
I'll tell you why sex education is so poor. Because although we purport ourselves to be an enlightened society, the United States of America was founded upon puritanical values. And those puritanical values have permeated basically all of society, especially when it comes to the educational system.
Hey everyone, welcome back to a new episode of the Healing Hormones Podcast. I'm Nina Boyce, your host, certified fertility awareness educator. And today I'm talking all about vaginas. Literally, we are going into so much detail about them, and we are busting so many myths that you are curious about in this podcast episode with Dr. Nicole Williams, who is a board certified gynecologist, hormone specialist, and the author of This Is How You Vagina, all about your vajayjay and why you probably shouldn't call it that. Dr. Williams is such an amazing person to talk to. I just loved her energy throughout this entire podcast. And we are talking about what your vagina should smell like, what it should look like, should you have hair down there. We are talking about the attraction between you and your partner. I mean, we are going through so many things that none of us were taught. Of course, we are touching on cervical mucus. We also talk about at the end of the podcast what you need to do to have a healthy vagina. And she gives away the three secrets. So I am so excited for you all to listen to this podcast episode. And let's just go ahead and hop right in. Okay, so today I am recording with Dr. Nicole Williams, and we are going to be chatting all about vaginas. We're going to be busting some myths. And anytime I can get a gynecologist on this podcast, I love to do so, because I feel like something else I would love to talk about is the fact that there's kind of a lot of fear between patient and gynecologist, and it'd be nice to kind of start to break down that barrier. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
It is my pleasure.
So what got you started with your work in gynecology? How did this happen? Did you always have an interest in this field, or what kind of prompted it for you?
Well, Nina, I knew I wanted to be a doctor. I just didn't know what kind. I was interested in cardiology just because one of my old mentors was a cardiologist. But once I got into it, I realized that cardiology was full of a bunch of 55 to 67-year-old men. And the likelihood that they were going to listen to anything that my little cute ass had to say was somewhere between slim and none. And then I did gynae, and I realized that women have just as many questions, but they actually seek answers, as opposed to waiting until they're like on death's door to come in. They're a lot more proactive about their health. And I wanted a more collaborative relationship with my patients. And that's how I ended up doing GYN.
Oh, I like that so much. And I think you're right. I feel like women really do have this like need, like, and they're very intuitive. Most of us are about our bodies. So it's like we sense something's off. And so we want to ask questions. We want to be able to kind of figure out what's going on. I like that you said
exactly.
You wanted.
And I really think, yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I really think that women are a lot more in tune with their bodies because we cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of gives us a little kind of reminder, like, oh, every month, something about our overall health. Like, is it early? Is it late? Is it heavy? Is it light? And that gives us a little bit more of a snapshot as to our overall health. And I think that's one of the reasons why. I mean, yes, it's a blessing and a little bit of a curse sometimes, but I think that's why women are so much more active about their health, because it's something that we think about nearly every month.
Mm-hmm. Well, and because our hormones fluctuate throughout the month, we also feel differently. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's also maybe a lot of questions like, is this normal? I feel more tired during this time. I feel more
sexual during this time. Like, we're, unlike a man who has a 24-hour hormonal cycle, right? Like, we're changing all the time. So we have so many different things going on. Like, come on. I mean, our bodies are pretty cool.
Really cool. And I really want, the reason I wrote the book, This Is How You Vagina, is because I wanted people to understand that what we go through nearly every month, all these shifts and ebbs and flows are just part of our natural cycling. And generally it's normal. Now it may be annoying, but it's generally normal. And that's why I advise my patients all the time, keep a diary.
Yeah.
You know, to say, oh, I felt a little horny this time. You know why you felt horny? You were probably ovulating.
Right.
And that's your time to be horny because that's going to increase your likelihood of conceiving. And you might be a little busy just before your menstrual cycle because your hormones are actually coming down. But once you understand these fluctuations, you're a lot more apt to embrace them and understand them as part of who you are.
Exactly. Well, I mean, the whole reason I got into coaching and doing fertility awareness education is because I realized, wow, this is stuff that so many of us don't know. Unfortunately, until there's like a problem. And then we start to get curious, like, what's going on? And then we reach out and seek help. But man, I wish, like, do you ever wonder why sex education isn't taught well enough? Because I can't tell you how many of my clients, when I'm teaching fertility awareness method, they're like, this is what cervical mucus is? Like, I didn't know this. And it's been happening to my body since I was like 14. Like, what's going on? Like, why is sex education so poor?
I'll tell you why sex education is so poor. Because although we purport ourselves to be an enlightened society, the United States of America was founded upon puritanical values. And those puritanical values have permeated basically all of society, especially when it comes to the educational system. I'm going to go off topic just a teeny weeny bit.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons why many people and a lot of parents are getting very up in arms about how kids are being educated is because that educational system sets the tone for the next generation. And since we were founded by Puritans. Mm-hmm. There you go. Mm-hmm. And so those Puritans already planted the seed that women were witches. Right. Remember Salem?
Right.
Those women were witches because they wanted to use natural remedies. Okay. That's why.
Right.
And that has all of these things have kind of granulated into our society and has permeated society and just kept going and going and going. And this is why when you go to eighth grade and you get sex education, you get abstinence education.
Yes.
You barely get anything about periods other than here's a pad, put it on when you start bleeding.
Right.
And it doesn't embrace femininity. It doesn't embrace all of the beautiful things that can happen with sexual intercourse or even with masturbation. And that is why in my book, I actually have a foreword from Dr. M. Joycelyn Elders. And you're like, who the hell is Dr.
M.
Joycelyn
Elders? Yeah, I'm like, I don't know who that is. Should I know who that is?
Yes, you should. And the reason you should know why Dr. M. Joycelyn Elders exists is because she used to be the Surgeon General of the United States in the 1990s. I'm not talking about 1965 or anything like that.
Yeah.
This is the 1990s during the Clinton administration. She was talking about education and sex education in schools, the exact topic that we're talking about. She recommended that masturbation be not taught. Nobody needs to be taught how to masturbate, but it should be mentioned as one of the things, just like abstinence, masturbation.
Mm-hmm.
That should be on the list of all the things that you just learned. Self-pleasure, and that it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
She got fired from her job by the Clinton administration.
Wow.
Remember the blue dress with the crusty stuff on it? That guy.
Yeah.
That guy fired her for that.
Oh my
gosh. And I found her and I sought her out.
And
she's a professor emerita. And she wrote the foreword because I wanted to bring her back to life. She's like 86 years old right now, but she is still a firecracker.
What a revolutionary for her time. I mean, like you said, it's only 1990, but still.
Thank you. It's not 1969 or something, you know, where we got to burn bras. No, this is like, we should have been more enlightened than that.
Yes.
And we weren't. And guess what? We still aren't.
I know. And that's so frustrating. You know, a quick story. And actually, she's a listener of this podcast. I used to teach middle school choir like years ago, like 7 years, eight, nine. I don't know how many years. But anyway, so She reached out to me recently. She's in high school now. And she was doing a report and she's trying to bring to light how she never learned so many things in school and how she wants to share this information with more girls her age now, because it's like, why have we never been taught this? And I was thinking to myself, oh my goodness, these young girls now are in high school trying to share that we want more of this education. And I just found out that the school still teaches abstinence. And in my mind, I'm like, wow, okay, I know that I learned abstinence, you know, in 2000, whatever. But I was like, now they're still teaching this? Like, we haven't learned better by now? I'm so shocked still. But I guess I'm not shocked. But there definitely needs to be a change. We need to make a change because so many of us want it.
The problem with trying to make that change is that you're going to run up against a massive vocal opposition full of Puritans. Mm-hmm. And they're a lot more vocal. They're going to donate more money.
Right.
And then we're still going to end up in a quagmire of a lot of younger women. And then you're talking about, you're counseling women on fertility awareness. They're in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and they still don't know this information. Right. Because it just wasn't allowed. But guess what? That's why we're here now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about this in the hopes that we can reach women in another way. So no, it may not ever happen through the schools, but hopefully we can overcome that by getting good, solid, well-founded information out there to combat some of the garbage that we notice on the internet.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking it might be up to future like mothers, aunts, or any parent that has a daughter really to then share that information, and then hopefully it'll trickle down. I have an 8-month-old daughter right now, and I'm always joke. I'm like, she's going to know so much about her period so early. But I mean, awesome. I think it is our responsibility, right? And so my hope is that it will start to trickle. There's a lot of podcasts. There's books coming out. There's so many people starting to speak up. That I hope it'll just continue to spread. If it's not in the school system, at least elsewhere.
Right. It's going to have to be like a granular movement. It's just going to be like a grassroots kind of thing. Like, look, vaginas should not be a bad word.
Right.
I mean, I got turned down from all of the major morning outlets, even though I have a pretty decent following and I have like a Chicago news covered all around in Chicago. But when it came to that next level, they're like, well, vaginas isn't morning news talk.
Mm.
I'm like, it's a body part that needs to be talked about because people don't understand it. Why is that not morning news? But morning news is fluff and celebrity news and, you know, diet.
Yes, exactly.
Not something that's really going to actually help teach you how to better understand your body and better appreciate your body.
It's usually quick fixes, like our quick diet tips or recipe tips or things like that. I will say I was on your website and I was kind of looking through some of your Fox interviews, your local news station. And I was like, whoa, I mean, they're talking about, she was like, now vaginas shouldn't have a smell, right? And I'm like, whoa, this is talked about on the news there. And so even hearing that, I was like, it feels bold because you're not used to hearing that.
It was, and it was a one-time thing. And after that, I was never allowed to talk about it again. I think I kind of eased that in the conversation.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad. And it was Fox, no less. I was excited to be able to have done that. And I'm going to go back and put that one back up on my social media again. Thank you.
You should. I was, it really did. I was like, woo, we went there. And I was so excited. Well, now that we're kind of talking about that, I feel like there are a lot of there are a lot of myths about the vagina, and I would love to just kind of talk about some of those. I mean, one, we already started it. Like, what should it smell like? And I have noticed personally, I can't believe I'm even putting this out here, but like after I got pregnant, things started to shift and I was like, what's going on down there? And then after I delivered, I was like, that's a little different than I'm used to. And now that I'm 8 months postpartum, it's like, different, and it changed again. But that was the first time where I had this thought, like, what's it supposed to smell like down there? Can we chat a bit about that?
Absolutely. I'm super excited. So your vagina is supposed to smell like your own particular vagina. vagina should not smell like daisies, roses, flowers, Chanel, or other fancy
lavender wipes.
Perfume.
Like they don't need to smell
no lavender
that.
Yeah. And orchid. None of those things. Vagina is a natural organ and it's going to shift based upon your hormones. So interestingly enough, you talked about when you got pregnant, your vagina had one smell. And when you delivered, yes. It had a different smell. But during your pregnancy, your hormones are like going like off the chart, right? So the bacteria in your vagina are going to change due to that. You have a lot more blood flow to that area. A lot more blood flow is going to equal a lot more water. And there are certain bacteria that like certain things a little bit more. And that's going to smell a little bit different.
Interesting.
Once you deliver and you're breastfeeding, the hormones are going to shift a little bit differently there. So generally, what we can expect it to be is generally subtle, maybe a little bit tangy, but it kind of, each woman has kind of their own, I call it, you know, their signature scent or their own personal branding.
Yeah.
And everybody's branded now these days anyway. So
yeah,
vagina was the original personal branding mechanism.
I love that. Yeah.
And she's been branded since the beginning. It's just that we try to cover it up with all sorts of other things because we think, oh my God, this is terrible. I mean, I just had a patient just the other day afraid to have sex with her boyfriend. I said, well, I thought he was going to smell me. And I'm like, good. You want him to smell you.
Yeah.
Now, why that? Now, we talked about the smell.
Pheromones, attraction, something like that.
Right. No, you're exactly right.
Okay.
Now, of course, pheromones have been proven to not exist.
Oh.
But your own particular signature scent, if a person, you know, male, female, neuter, gender neutral, whomever is nuzzling in your vagina, they're going to drink in your signature scent. That scent is going to be associated with something positive, which is sexual.
Yes.
And that aids in bonding.
Interesting. This is very interesting. And I have a friend, I will not say her name, but if she were to listen to this, I always laugh because she has to shower. Both of them have to shower. They have to be like cleansed before any sort of sexual activity. And me and my friend's group, we have, you know, girls group. We all talk about this kind of stuff. We're always laughing at her like, come on, like you guys have been together for so long. She's like, no, we need to be showered.
Oh my God. Well, sometimes I hate to say it, sloppy sex is like the best. And then you're laying there and there is a little smell that happens. I mean, if you're with a partner for a really long time, everybody's been tested and you're not using condoms.
Right.
That is actually a smell that you don't forget.
That's so true.
And it is a good smell. Like, you know, you have a husband, boyfriend, or whomever, if it's a male or even a female or a neutral person, if they come from the gym and they're just a little sweaty and they have a little something going on, you're like...
You notice
it's not a lot of that. And that's the reason why. And that's why we don't want to cover our natural vaginal scent with perfumes and douches and all that kind of stuff.
And think about
how many animals, right?
Yes, exactly. We are. Like, it's very primal. But, you know, we've been also conditioned to feel embarrassed about that, which I think is really great that we are having these conversations. I mean, even the idea of cervical mucus, like seeing something on your underwear, like that always used to be very embarrassing. I mean, I used to be embarrassed about it. I didn't even know it was normal until later on. So it's like scent, we should have learned about that. Like that cervical mucus, we definitely should have learned about that and what that
is. Oh my God, we should all know about cervical mucus because I have patients who are still deathly afraid of having anything on their underwear at the end of the day when they take their panties off. And I go, okay, so think about it like this. Our mouths are always making saliva, right?
Right.
And the reason that we don't have to just spit it out all the time is because we can swallow it. Our vaginas can't swallow, but we're always making a little bit of fluid in order, because it's a mucous membrane, just like the inside of my lip or my gut or the rectum. It's a mucous membrane. So it needs a little water. So of course, some's going to dribble out and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's why we have panties.
Exactly.
And there should be cotton and no liners with plastic because that's going to suffocate your vagina.
What do you think about the period panties? Have you tried those?
Period panties are actually a very cool construct.
I just got sent two free pairs. Shout out to Modi Body. I haven't tried them yet, but I'm very intrigued. You have?
I'll tell you why you should try them. A couple different reasons. So the first reason is it probably works really well for like a lighter day, but not like that second day was kind of like a lot. And secondarily, three things. They're reusable. You can wash them and reuse them. So it's better for the environment. I also like, I mean, if whatever the company is, because I don't get sent free stuff, but if you could talk to that company about perhaps donating
some period panties to either the unhoused
or women in prison. Oh, yes.
Because women in prison, and I actually talk about this in This Is How You Vagina, so it's not just a vagina how-to book. I had to throw some social stuff in there just because I am who I am. But for women who are in prison, you're only allowed like so many pads per month.
Why? Why? That's crazy.
Money. And so if you bleed heavier or, you know, you use up your pads or then that's it for you. You're ending up soiling your clothing and having to wash it out. But if you had period panties, maybe even like a couple of pair of women, imagine how much better those women would feel. Same for the unhoused. Like you can't change a menstrual cup in a public bathroom. You could, but I would say that would be incredibly difficult.
Yes.
Right? It's easier to just wash out period panties and use them.
One of the first questions I'm asked when somebody is interested in using fertility awareness method is, what kind of thermometer should I buy? And hands down, my top favorite thermometer is Temp Drop. And you've probably heard me talk about it before. I am the biggest fan of Temp Drop for so many reasons. First, it's a wearable thermometer, so you don't have to worry about waking up at the same time every day. You don't have to worry about if you had a rough night's sleep, or maybe you worked late, or you drank the night before, or any other variable that can disrupt your basal body temps the morning of, especially if you are a new mom and you're still waking up in the middle of the night. Temp Drop is such a fantastic resource when you're trying to start fertility awareness method again. So with Temp Drop, you put the device on your arm right before bed and it takes the most accurate temperature throughout the night. So all you have to do when you wake up is pop that temperature into your favorite charting method or sync it to your app and you are good to go. The best thing about Temp Drop is it's backed by science. It uses the latest scientific knowledge to bring you an accurate method of cycle tracking and helping you identify when that fertile window is over. It also has zero radiation, which I know is a big question and concern for people wearing these devices overnight. So I love that. And of course, it's safe and non-invasive. So if you are looking to get started with fertility awareness method, or maybe you already have gotten started and you're just really tired of taking your temp orally in the morning, I highly encourage you to try out Temp Drop. And you can use my code NINA12 to get 12% off your purchase. Again, that's code NINA12 for 12% off, and we will link that code in the show notes for you. I cannot wait for your fertility awareness method charting to get that much easier. Let me know if you try it. I love it, and I hope you do too. I had an experience. So I live downtown Columbus, and I saw a woman unhoused that was bleeding through her pants. I had nothing on me. And like she passed me, and it was just one of those things, like in that moment, I wish I would have done something or could have done something. But that was the first time it occurred to me, you know, where I witnessed and I was like, oh my goodness, something that I don't even, you know, I take for granted that I can just go to the store and buy something. And I never, you know, I mean, that's privilege, but I've never thought about that until I saw it. And I was like, we need to do something about that.
And there you go. That's something that can easily be done. If you have contacts with these companies that are making these kind of donations, there you go. That goes to a shelter. And then that's one woman who is not having a free bleed.
Yes. Oh, that is, I'm going to definitely reach out to the company and see if they're doing anything like that or any initiatives like that. That's a really great idea.
Awesome. Please do.
Yeah. So, okay. So we've, you know, we're kind of busting these myths about the vagina. Are there any other that you've seen like, your patients come in and you really want to debunk these facts for them? Like a very common myth?
Well, a very common myth. I think we talked about discharge, which is the biggest one.
Right.
Discharge, odor. And the third one is my patients always wonder, am I normal?
Right.
Do I look normal? How's it looking down there? And she look okay. And I go, it looks just like a vagina. Because anatomy books only have one type of vagina in on their pages, and it looks like these really, really teeny, weeny labia minora, mm-hmm. itty bitty labia majora. Everything is so cute and little and itty bitty. And you go, okay, I have not, I've seen maybe like two vaginas look like that in my entire life, and I've been doing this for 17 years.
Right. You see a lot of them. You see a lot of them.
Right. And I see a lot of vaginas. Yeah. I'm about to see 20 right now. Yeah. So they believe that the kind of porn construct as to what a vagina is supposed to look like, where they're embarrassed and sometimes with a lover that somehow, you know, if their labia are uneven or something like that. And there have been surgeries that popped up around this. So I get one patient a day asking me, does it look normal?
Interesting.
And for most of the time, if it's well hydrated, if your vagina is well hydrated, like if you're leaving some hair down there, which is another, you know, a little bit of a controversy that kind of ebbs and flows throughout history.
I did have that question pop in my head. So we'll go there.
Ah, excellent. So if she's well hydrated, leave a little hair, you're wearing cotton underpants, and you're minimizing anything that's going to keep oxygen from getting to your vagina, generally it's okay. Because remember, the labia, when we're formed in our body, in our mom's bellies, what happens is everything is split down the middle. That's why you kind of have this neural plate. And then you end up with two eyes, nose, and this is how everything kind of goes bilaterally. But nobody's exactly symmetrical.
Right.
Nobody. So sometimes you have one boob, it's a little bit bigger than the other one.
Right.
And that's okay. Same thing. You might have one labia that's a little bit bigger than the other one, or a lot of it bigger than the other one. And that's fine. Now, if it's tearing or if it's bunching or something like that, then sure, that could be a medical problem that we could remedy. But for most women, asymmetry is actually the norm.
I bet you're easing a lot of people's minds right now.
Good.
I mean, and that also goes back to body positivity. And we all we judge ourselves so hardcore everywhere. We're even judging our vaginas now. You know, it's like we have this unrealistic ideal of perfection everywhere. But it did make me wonder.
No kidding.
It did make me wonder about the hair because is that just personal preference? I mean, I know that it protects against bacteria. At least that's what I've heard. I don't know if that's, true or not. But I tend to be the one that I've gotten my fair share of Brazilians. Like, I just like them. And so I'm curious, is there any need for it? Is it really just personal preference? I mean, what are the facts around that?
So I do believe that you should leave some hair down there. I mean, first of all, we grew it for a reason. So there should be some hair down there because it provides for a cushion, especially up on top. When they say more cushion for the pushing, that's the thing. So yes, it is useful there. Secondarily, the very bottom of the hair follicle, that holds the sweat glands too. Mm. And that helps hold in your signature scent. So if you're bald down there, if you did like the Brazilian sisters did, and you have zero hair there, then your vagina is not going to have very much signature scent. It's just going to smell like anything. And whoever's nuzzling down there is going to be like, whatever, next.
Interesting.
You have nothing interesting there for them. And another reason that you want to grow some hair is because then, yes, we want to look at our vaginas and we want to understand our anatomy, but we don't want to overanalyze it. And I think that one of the reasons, and I tell my patients this all the time, we've been born and bred to overanalyze our vaginas, but it's not our fault. I'm going to blame Cosmopolitan. I'm going to blame the internet. I'm going to blame Instagram, and I'm going to blame porn. For a lot of our preconceived notions and our fears and anxieties around genital health. And that's why we're here to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. I knew that there were definitely reasons for it. I just like what I like, but it's so true.
If you have on a bathing suit and it's kind of, high cut,
right.
I'm not going to leave my bush out.
Yeah, exactly.
No. leg hair, you don't really need. Okay, fine. Leg hair is going down the side.
Yeah.
Goes. Even me.
Yeah.
That's gone.
Yeah.
But I certainly leave, what do they call them? Landing strips?
Yes, yes, that is what it's called.
And I like to know I made it out of puberty.
Right. Yeah. It does definitely show you that you've made it out of puberty. I will just say when I started getting Brazilians, I was like, wow, this is kind of nice. Also, it's like pure laziness when I'm showering probably too. I was like, I don't have to worry about this. But also, like I said, to each his own, right? Some people like, we all like it different down there. So I was thinking,
and you know, vaginas are like fingerprints. No two are alike.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So whenever I have a gynecologist on the podcast, I definitely want to at least bring up and talk about birth control because, you know, something that I find, you know, as a fertility awareness educator, I think people will assume I only advocate for fertility awareness as birth control, which isn't true. I really, the whole conversation we're having is I think we need all the options. And so I'm curious, like, what is your stance or belief on birth control, the different options, and how often are you now getting women coming in saying, I want a non-hormonal form of birth control? And I'm, you know, I'm sure you
a
get,
lot.
Yeah, a lot. So I just want to know your stance on all of it and how you kind of approach the topic of birth control.
So it's somebody who kind of came up. I was born in the 70s. Ooh, let's say that for real. That happened. And so this was women's liberation. During women's liberation, the birth control pill was released. And thanks to the birth control pill, my mother was able to control when she conceived.
Right.
And that did not happen before the 70s when the pill was real. I mean, it came out in the 60s, but you know, only not too many people had it. So it was really the 70s when the birth control pill literally freed women from, oh my God, am I pregnant this month?
Mm-hmm.
That could be a real fear for them because what if you're on your fifth kid?
Yeah, exactly.
And so what's interesting to me is somebody who understands the history of birth control and how it was remarkable. It was absolutely amazing. And I tell my patients, birth control pills were the third greatest medical invention ever. The first one is penicillin, saved millions of lives. Second one, aspirin, saved millions of lives. Third one, birth control pills saved millions of women's lives. So imagine if you are in a battered relationship and your partner was keeping you pregnant. And if you got pregnant, you knew you're going to get beat up more.
Yeah.
If you were on the pill, it saved your life.
Yep.
So when I see now, you know, we're talking 40, 50, 40 something years later, we are seeing patients who are like, okay, I don't want hormones because hormones are bad. I have to go back and re-educate my patients because birth control pills have never been proven to make you gain weight. I was on the pill for 10 years. I still weighed basically the same as what I did that entire time. Food makes people gain weight. Lack of exercise, living an unhealthy lifestyle, that's what makes people gain weight. And I want my patients to not blame hormones. I want us to understand how our bodies work, but I don't want that to be a cop-out or blaming, like, oh, it's my hormones.
Right.
Because then we're feeding into that mythology, and then the next generation doesn't get any smarter. So yes, I'm a huge fan of birth control pills as a first line. It's easy to start, easy to stop. There's at least 20 different brands of pill out there, and generally you can find one that will work incredibly well for you. Now, there's different ways to take it. You can take it orally. You can take it as a ring. You can take it as a patch. You can take it as a shot. So many different ways to do it. Some that will have you have a period every month because some people like to have a period, which is fine. And some women are like, well, if I'm not trying to have a baby, then I don't want to have a period. It's really inconvenient for me. You know, it's messing with my lifestyle and, you know, I got to work, et cetera. Then fine. You don't have to do it there either. So I do talk a lot, as you can tell, to my patients about why birth control is historically important and why it's still relevant today. Now, today, women have a lot more options, which is really, really wonderful.
Yeah.
We have an IUD that is non-hormonal. We also have a hormonal IUD. But here's the thing. We don't know exactly how IUDs work. I know. So a copper IUD and a hormone-containing IUD, we really think that that's just a device in the uterus that disrupts the movement of sperm, but we can't, you know, say absolutely for sure because a hormonal IUD and a non-hormonal IUD are both equally effective.
Right.
The hormonal IUD just keeps you from having a period or keeps your period a lot lighter, which is a wonderful side effect as far as I'm concerned. For me, as a practicing OBGYN right now, I tell my patients, you have as many choices as you want. You want to do a hormonal birth control to control your period. Or sometimes women, there have been birth control pills that actually have studies that if you do have PMDD or really severe PMS, because what happens is as your hormones go up, you feel great. But when they start to crash down just before your menstrual cycle starts, those women can be severely affected. And by keeping you at a steady state with a daily small dose of hormone, because you're not going to fluctuate up and down like you would, you keep nice and low somewhere in the middle, those women don't suffer from PMS as often. And that has substantiated studies. And I talk about that all the time, especially from my patients who are a little, suffer from anxiety or depression. I go, you know what, let's just give this a try. And I educate them as much as possible. Then there's a new one. So if we're talking, I'm totally fine otherwise, there's a new one. It is a vaginal insert, which is actually pretty cool.
What's that one?
It's completely non-hormonal. What? It's called Phexxi.
Oh, yeah. So I have been learning a lot about Phexxi recently. Yeah. I wanted to get them on the podcast. I find it very fascinating. I mean, you obviously, go ahead. You can talk more to it since I'm sure you know more about it.
Interesting. The only thing is you do have to be a little responsible about it. It's like condom use. You know what I mean? You have to make sure you get it in before each act of sex. So you can't have sex the night before, wake up and have sex in the morning and think it's still going to be there, because then that's, you know, you'll be nauseous in a few weeks and wondering why.
Yeah.
But it's a really great non-hormonal option. You don't have to keep it in the fridge or anything like that. And if you don't want any hormones in your life, or you're just fine without it, or if you're fine with having a period, absolutely. We do have the options. And that's what's great about being a young woman in 2021.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad that we are having this conversation, because I do find there's a lot of heat and conflict on Instagram with, you know, whether it's like the medical community or the holistic community or whatever, just attacking each other, because in the space that I'm in, it can be a lot of like birth control is horrible, 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 horrible. And it's just, then that's making anyone that's on birth control feel like maybe they feel great on it, you know, and they really love the ease of it, and they love, but like, and so, right. So it's like, why are we just bashing all sides? But then I've also seen on the flip side, gynecologists coming out and being like bashing people, even fertility awareness educators, like on specific things for even just sharing about that. And so again, I think it's about education. Like, I just wish we knew all of the options, because you're right. You have so many options to choose from. If you don't feel great on this, you might feel great on this. Maybe you do want, I mean, and just like Phexxi, fertility awareness for birth control, it takes a responsibility, right? Like you really got to
be on top of it, and you cannot cheat.
Yeah. You got to track every day. You got to know what you're doing. And so is that the best option for everyone? Like, I even think about my daughter down the line. Am I going to be like, you know, like, will I trust? I'm going to teach her everything, but we'll have to have conversations, right? I'm really liking Phexxi. Like, the more I hear about it, I think a lot of women are intrigued by that. But again, you do have to be responsible to do that. If you don't want to get pregnant, you got to be
ready.
Every
single time. Just like tracking your cycles and tracking your fertility, it does require a bit of personal responsibility. And so sometimes other forms of birth control, like a long-acting IUD or an injectable or the one that they little rod that they put in your arm, kind of takes the human factor out of it. So it's up to me as a clinician physician talking to my each individual patient saying, hey, you know, which thing do you think you would feel the most comfortable with? And guess what? It might take a couple tries to find that thing, but that's why I'm here for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really like that, and that you have communication with your clients, because I think there's a fear that it's just going to be try this, or maybe their symptom or what they're feeling isn't being validated, and they feel very lost when they go in to look at what best option is for them for birth control. Okay, so going back to your book, when did this book come out, or did it just come out?
It came out at the end of September, early October.
Perfect. And
so it's relatively new.
Talk to us about the birth of this book. What, you know, were you just like, I need to get all this information out here? What are we going to find in the book? Give us all the goods about it.
All right. So my book is called This Is How You Vagina, All About Your Vajayjay and Why You Probably Shouldn't Call It That. I originally planned on making this like a blog post. I was just going to be short, sweet, and to the point. But then I started thinking about all of the questions that my patients had for me. And each of those questions kind of turned into a chapter. And that's why I wrote about bloody vaginas. I wrote about itchy vaginas. I wrote about smelly vaginas. I wrote about there's something growing on my vagina. So each of those things became, and I started going online and doing a lot of research in the medical literature because I have access to things that my patients do not. And then comparing that to what I found in the lay literature, which sometimes they had nothing to do with each other. And I wanted to rectify that for my patients because people can really get very easily confused. Yeah. As to like, if you're scrolling and you're seeing these things, is once you start clicking on one thing, it's going to be get another and another thing right. looks just like that.
Right.
And that's why the book ended up being, it's not that long. You should be able to read the whole thing. I wrote it, I shortened it enough so that everybody will. It is 257 pages,
not
but
bad.
There's pictures in it.
Nice.
And there's pictures just, you know, and I wrote it in a conversational way. I wanted it to be something that any girl, probably from the age of anywhere like 12, 13, pretty mature, 14 and up for sure. I mean, I've had patients in their 60s, 50s and 60s saying, wow, I learned something from this book. And I am so glad that I read it because now I'm going to tell my nieces, I'm going to tell my daughter who has like an 8-year-old girl, you know what, when she's, this is the book you're going to want to give her later on in life because it's going to empower her.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote it because I want people to feel better about being a vagina owner
yeah.
and not to feel ashamed about what your vagina is doing naturally.
Mm-hmm. Mm, it's so needed. I'm so glad that you wrote this book. And a lot of the stuff that we talked about, I'm sure, is included in there.
Yes, it is.
First of all, I'm sure that they can get it anywhere, correct? Like all the places that books are sold.
Yes, it's at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, but I would encourage anybody, please go to your local bookseller because you can order it there and they will probably have it on the shelves. We're in about 25 states, all the major cities, so the book should be in a local bookstore. And then guess what? You might find a gift for somebody for the holidays or find another book in that local bookstore. So then you're supporting.
Yeah.
Your local small business owners.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, I'm so glad that we had you on the podcast and we could have this conversation. Just to kind of round things out, is there anything we didn't cover that you just wish that vagina owners would understand and know before we head off? That might be a loaded question.
Oh, no. I talk about the three things that your vagina really needs. And those things are pretty simple. They are soap, water, and sunshine.
Sunshine.
Soap meaning plain soap, Dove, Ivory, Dial, something very, you know, few ingredients. Bar soap too. Nobody should pay for water. Water, meaning yes, externally cleaning with water, but staying hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
A well-hydrated vagina is a happy vagina.
Mm-hmm.
And then sunshine, meaning we don't necessarily always have to cross our legs unless we're wearing like amazing little teeny weeny skirt.
Mm-hmm.
You want to give her air. We don't want to sleep in underwear. And you want to avoid thongs unless it's like date night and you don't plan on wearing them for like a short period of time. We have like a certain dress that you want to wear and nobody wants to see your panty lines. But those are our three major things. Soap, water, sunshine.
Okay, wait.
And that's all you need for a happy, healthy vagina.
Now, before we go, I need to ask you one more question because this intrigued me because I sleep in underwear and I wear thongs quite often. And you said cotton. And I realized a lot of the ones that I have are not, they're the stretchy.
Nylon or spandex or lycra.
Yeah, like the seamless ones that I just really like from. And I feel like I'm doing many faux pas. Like I literally just heard three. So let's just recap that really quick. So if we want a beautifully healthy vagina, drink some water.
Yes.
And then.
Water?
Do you sleep like, can you, like yoga pants? Like, is that not good either? Like, because no underwear and yoga pants? Like, what's the deal with that?
Yoga pants are okay, but if you find your vagina being irritated by, if you're like, okay, so I wear yoga pants 5 times a week, not me, but if you're thinking, well, I'm wearing yoga pants every single day, my vagina is really irritated and oh my God, you know, I have a lot of discharge and I'm just so bothered by it. The first thing to do is stop wearing the yoga pants.
Mm.
Now, if your vagina is fine with the yoga pants, if you still have like a plain white discharge and, you know, like normal type stuff, then it's probably okay.
Mm.
But just for optimal vaginal health, we want her well oxygenated and doing lycra spandex. Look, I was a ballet dancer. So I wore a lot of lycra spandex.
Yes. Yeah.
But when I was finished dancing, I took them off.
Give us some breathing.
So not to wear every single day of your life. Like it's like a special occasion kind of thing. If your vagina is very, very, if you start to get irritated wearing these things, that's why I talk to my patients about, we can start with soap, water, and sunshine, cotton drawers. Don't sleep in underwear anyway, because she needs moonshine too. And that goes into keeping your vagina well oxygenated. If you're always stifling it, it's like wearing a panty liner basically every single day. And then you start to be in this anaerobic environment. An anaerobic environment breeds the unhealthy bacteria like Mobilungus, Gardnerella, Mycoplasma, Ureaplasma, those type of bacteria, which your body's trying to keep in check with Lactobacilli, the happy bacteria. So it's fine to have a vaginal faux pas every once in a while. Just something to keep in the back of your mind. If your scent has changed to something that you don't like, anything like that, then go, maybe I should back off the thongs for a little while. Maybe I should back off the leggings for a little while and see if I can aerate my vagina and get her back healthy.
I am so glad that that got thrown into the podcast, because I've never talked about that before on here. And I mean, somebody that talks about this stuff all the time, I've like never really thought about that before. And so I'm having like, whoa, mind blown. I need to give her some sunshine. Give her some sunshine. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for coming on the podcast, and make sure to share the book again for us, where people can find you on the internet and all of that good information.
So the book is called This Is How You Vagina, All About Your Vajayjay and Why You Probably Shouldn't Call It That. It's available on Amazon. We're getting great reviews there. You can find it on Barnes & Noble and your local bookseller. You can find me at Dr. Nicole Life, N-I-C-O-L-E-L-I-F-E. That's just my life. And at Gynecology Institute. That is my practice's Instagram. And of course, we're also on Facebook at Gynecology Institute of Chicago. Oh, one more thing.
Yeah.
We have a website for This Is How You Vagina. It is thisishowyouvagina.com.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, we will link all that in the show notes. And thank you again so much for coming on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks so much. Happy vagina.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode with Dr. Nicole Williams. I hope that you guys enjoyed it. And make sure to check out her book, This Is How You Vagina, All About Your Vajayjay and Why You Probably Shouldn't Call It That. It is available on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, and most likely at your local bookstore. So we will link that in the show notes for you. Okay, everyone, that's all I have for this week. And I will talk to you next Monday with a new guest. And I'll see you soon.